Hi, I'm Mike Gasowitz, CEO of Tricert Financial Group. Welcome to the third episode of our podcast series called Echoes, all about legacy planning. Today's podcast topic is crafting your legacy blueprint, really talking about considerations and goals when we do legacy planning. I'm joined by Gord Hardy, head of our financial planning group. Welcome, Gord.
Glad to be back, Mike. Looking forward to the discussion today.
Yeah, should be a good one. So, considerations, goals. Well, if you think about legacy planning and echoes, it's likely first and foremost about children, assuming you have children. So why don't we start there, Gord? What kinds of considerations should one take into account about their kids?
Well, I think it really depends on your situation and the complexity, and also the children themselves. You know, unless you were blessed with twins or triplets or quadruplets, you're going to have kids at different ages and different stages in life. So one of the things you want to look at is making sure that everybody is taken care of to the extent that you want. But that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody is going to get the same thing. I know we'll talk about some of the different situations and potentials later on in the talk today. But, you know, first of all, it's figuring out what everybody is going to need. And if you're married, probably the first starting point is getting you and your spouse on the same page as to what that looks like and what each of the kids, I don't want to say deserve, but require or get on the same page with regard to your vision for what you want to see happen with your assets when you're done with them.
Right. Yeah. Getting on the same page is, it's pretty important. It sounds easy, but, it's not necessarily dependent on the situations.
No. It's very interesting, and it's very common for us to have one spouse that says, well, you know, we put the kids through school. We got them started with their first house. The kids get what they get. Right. And sometimes that will kind of flare up in a discussion when you've got both spouses there. So, you know, it is very difficult because everybody thinks differently and feels differently about money and that legacy. So right. It does require a lot of planning. Typically, it's one of the last things a financial planner will look at when they're going through a plan with people, but it is really critical and very time consuming.
To what extent would the kids actually be involved in the conversation? Is that a good idea? Is it not a good idea?
I would say when the kids are younger, probably not. It really depends. I've seen it be a complete surprise, where everything is kept really quiet from mom and dad, and the kids don't know anything, to the kids being involved to some extent because, you know, maybe they've reached an age where one of the kids or multiple kids have reached the age where the parents feel confident that the kids could actually be an executor of the estate. And then for complex business situations, we've certainly seen where mom and dad will have the kids who are either current shareholders or going to be shareholders as they take over the family farm or family business. And it'll be a very detailed, almost like a family board meeting to explain what is happening with mom and dad and how the transition will occur and how the kids will be able to financially benefit as they take over the operation.
Mm, yeah. Good points. So talking about kids, and you touched upon it, you know, let's talk about equalization. What types of considerations there in terms of this notion of treating the kids equal, if in fact that's what someone wants?
Well, a lot of people will kind of operate, you know, oh, I've got $1 million. I've got two kids. I want each of the kids to have $500,000. That is the simplest definition of equal. you know, I kind of look at it and there's nothing wrong with that approach, but I mentioned earlier kids could be in different life stages. They could be in very different financial situations. So, you know, while equal is great, $500,000 to one child may not have as much impact, or they may not require the same amount of money as another child would.
Right.
You know, we talked about businesses before, and this is one of the things that we typically see with farming clients, but it could be for any business. If you have one child that is interested in taking over the business and three that don't, if I divide up my estate equally and one child gets my business that's worth $2 million and everybody else got $2 million in cash, I would tend to look at it as, okay, I've got a lot of opportunity as the child getting the business, but I've also got a significant amount of effort to make that $2 million work for me.
Right.
And there's a lot of risk, because if something happens to that business, whether it's inside your control or outside as the business owner, you could be in a situation where you potentially lose some or all of that money. And you've got three siblings that each have $2 million that are invested in a portfolio. Now, there is still potential risk there, but that risk is more controllable than potentially a business and outside influences. So I kind of look at it and I kind of say, given the option of $2 million in a business that I have to work on and has that amount of risk versus $2 million of cash, I don't see those as equal.
Right. It's almost a notion of risk adjusted,
exactly.
Equality.
Yeah. Risk and effort.
Yeah. This topic is so key, because if you think about it, probably the highest level objective when you talk about ECHO's legacy planning is you want to, you know, you've not only built a business, you've built a family, and you want the family to go on and be close and obviously cooperative. And so the last thing I think most parents would want is to have the legacy actually cause rifts. You know, I think Oliver has used the term that if you don't do this equalization very well, it could be, you know, the last Christmas may actually be the last Christmas of the kids being together. And I don't think many people want that. And so
absolutely. It comes down to, unfortunately, this is going to happen at a time where everybody is emotional over losing a parent or the final parent, and money and emotions and whatever sibling dynamic may already have been there throughout their lifetimes can really come to an ugly flashpoint. So that's why you want to do this, you want to take the time, you want to do it well, so that there's not a lot of ambiguity, so kids can potentially get into fights and cause those rifts.
Let's move on to charities. So let's say, well, you may have kids and that's great, and you still may want to consider charities, or if you don't have kids, I guess regardless. Talk to us about charities.
Well, charities are very interesting, and it's always been a standard thing in a lot of wills that I've seen, at least, where after you know the kids are taken care of, whether there is a personal history or a family history or familiarity with a charity or charities, people do like to provide gifting for those charities in their wills. And it's interesting because it's meant to be a positive, and it's a sort of another form of legacy. Depending on the size of the gift, it could, you know, it could be the name of a of a foundation that's set up that will do larger good for a charity. Or it could be just a small token of appreciation. Say, for example, you know, your parents had cancer and they decide that, you know, because of the care they got and the advances from cancer research, they want to kind of pay it forward and hopefully improve the situation for future generations dealing with the same situation. One of the interesting things about charities, we'll see a couple of different ways where people will do it. They'll either specifically say, I will give X number of dollars to this charity. The other option is, I've seen before where people will say, I want to give 10% of my estate to a specific charity. And that's really great, but what we've seen over the past few years, I won't name the charity, we won't shame anybody here, but there have been some charities that have started suing the executor of the estate for not settling the estate properly, which then impacts the percentage of the estate that they ultimately receive.
Wow.
So it's unfortunate that it has started to happen, but, you know, charities need more money. They look at this as a potential way to get their fair share, per se. So it's something that if I spot in a will, I really tend to try and get them to go, you know what, let's name an amount instead. Let's not make it a potential nightmare for your executor. And if I was ever named executor on a will and I was aware of that, it would be something that I would be pushing to get them to change.
It's a really good point. Sad point, but a good point, because at the end of the day, charities, I mean, they're not businesses, they're charities, but they are organizations. And sadly, there's some not so good ones, you know, in terms of how they behave or what they think is right. Doesn't line up with what's right for the family at that point in time. So
exactly.
Very good point. Let's talk structures. You know, structures in terms of, again, managing the assets once the heads of the family pass away.
Yeah, typically the two most common structures are a trust. And it really depends on the situation. I've seen situations where families will have a trust for all of the beneficiaries. They'll all be named in the trust. And the executor is responsible for following through on income payments, capital payments as specified by the trust documentation. Particularly when it comes to disabled children, If they were just in a normal trust, then all of the income would be taxable and would affect the disability benefits that they might be entitled to. So in the case of a disabled child, we would recommend a separate trust called a Henson Trust,
okay,
which would allow for the income to be protected specifically for a disabled child. Other uses of trusts, we would want to make sure if you've got children that are under the age of, say, 18 or 19, absolutely you would want a responsible adult taking care of those assets for them. That would typically be the executor or someone else named in the trust documentation that you trust to look after the money in the kid's best interests. The other aspect is, if you have not a disabled child, but maybe a challenged situation, that could be a lifestyle situation. It could be a child in the midst of a divorce or at risk of a divorce. And you want to make sure that you're protecting the assets and not potentially having the money go to a beneficiary where they might lose it just because of the stage or situation in life that they're in.
Right.
So having a trust set up is more for their protection, or I guess maybe the protection of their future, as opposed to just handing them a big whack of cash at potentially the wrong time in their life.
Okay. Business perspectives. So as we've already mentioned, many of our clients are owners, operators of, call them family businesses, small enterprises, small to medium sized businesses. So what kind of business perspective should be taken into account here?
Well, I think as soon as you've got a business, your situation is a lot more complex. Whether you're transferring the business within the family or it's going to be an outside sale, you want to make sure that everything is structured properly. And one of the big things with that is, the protection aspect, making sure that the business is not put at risk as the assets move to a new generation. But you also want to do it in a tax efficient manner. And the taxation becomes a lot more nuanced when you're dealing with a business. You've got capital gains exemptions, different assets that can transfer at different rates that affect taxation. So number one thing, do not try and stick handle your estate planning if you've got a business on your own. First and foremost, use your CPA, get them to set up the best structure, the timing of it. Some cases, maybe it's better to do it on death. Maybe some cases you're better to transition the business prior to. CPA will help you work through that and structure everything so that you will pay the least amount of tax possible and it's most efficient for the next generation.
So, and basically it is tax. I guess that's probably the last consideration, taxes and all of this.
Yeah, we've got all kinds of different tax strategies that we want to take a look at. Obviously, the easiest is, if you've got a married couple and one of the spouses dies, you want to make sure you've got your beneficiary designations set up for the surviving spouse on RRSPs, retirement income funds, because that will allow the tax to be deferred until the death of the surviving spouse. Essentially, assets will roll over on a tax-free basis to the surviving spouse. No muss, no fuss, continue on. Same with tax-free savings accounts. You can do the same thing on a beneficiary designation. You can also look at setting up a successor annuitant as well. This is something we see a lot more with TFSAs because if I have my wife as the beneficiary of my TFSA and I die, she receives the assets, but they're paid out of the tax-free savings account. So if I have $100,000 in my TFSA, she gets the $100,000 non-taxable, but it's now going to have to be invested outside of a tax-free savings account, and tax will be paid on the investment income on an annual basis. If we set her up as successor annuitant, she becomes the owner of my TFSA, so that money stays within a TFSA shelter. No tax is payable on the income. You don't get the $7,000 a year contribution room for my former TFSA anymore, but that $100,000 generates non-taxable income because it's still inside the shelter of the TFSA.
Oh, so the shelter remains.
Absolutely.
Okay.
If you're looking at a surviving spouse or, divorced couple and you're looking at planning and passing assets to your kid, one particular thing that we catch all the time is I've got all these funds. I'm going to maybe give my RSP or retirement income fund proceeds to one of my kids. Mm-hmm. And then I'll give these assets to my other kids. The challenge with that is unless you're rolling it over to your spouse or a minor child under the age of 18, all of that income goes on your terminal tax return. CRA assumes that you effectively sold the assets just prior to your death. It all comes in as taxable income on your final tax return, and you pay tax at the top rate. The challenge of giving that money to one or even a couple of your kids, as the beneficiary, they get the gross amount, but the tax is still going to be owing to the estate. Right. So if most of the assets were in RSPs or RIFs, you could risk leaving the executor holding the bag with not enough money to pay CRA and to pay the other beneficiaries. So typically, at a bare minimum, we would want to see a letter signed by the kids if they are receiving the documents, to say, I recognize there will be tax owing to the estate and I will refund the estate with the amount owing on my pro rata share of the RIF assets. It becomes tricky because people want to try and avoid probate fees, which, you know, yes, they're great to save, but they're not a huge amount for most estates. So you can cause a really large compound problem by trying to avoid something small. So again, utilizing your CPA or your financial planner to help navigate some of these can help you, you know, avoid trying to save cents and costing yourself or your estate dollars.
Exactly. I know there is this, I'd almost say a misplaced fear on probate, but the reality is it's actually not that large. It's just, yeah, it can exactly. be a delay, understood. Nobody wants that at that point in time, but yeah, good words of wisdom there. Yeah. You know, when I look at all these considerations, I really come back to the value, you know, our approach in terms of integration and not only as a sales pitch, whether you're with us with TriCert and one of our CPA firms or not, at the end of the day, you really do need a financial planner at the table. You need that CPA at the table as well, alongside the people managing the assets. So, yeah, for sure, a lot of items to take into consideration here. Gord, thanks so much for this.
Thanks, Mike.
As always, folks, any questions, please reach out to your CPA firm financial planner, your portfolio manager here at TriCert Investment Counsel, or don't hesitate to reach out to myself. Take care.